Blog Talk Radio.
Fart Mix.
I want you to know that I'm happy for you. I wish nothing but the best for you both. I know the version of me. Like me, she goes down to you in a theater. She's bigger, that's my name. And when she has a baby, sure she's never really had a mother.
Show www.thematthewaronshow.com at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook. That was You Oughta Fart by Alanis Morissette.
Alanis Morris Fart is more like it.
Ooh, that was a wet song.
That was very wet.
Oh,
very wet.
Oh my God.
So
yes, introduce
I
the
am
show.
Here. This is Matthew Aaron, of course, sitting in with
Steve Weirich, and I'm sitting next to
Alex Lucy.
Filling in for Lee Cabreras.
Lee Cabreras, yes.
Filling in for.
Thank you.
He's
thank
definitely
you,
filling in
you.
For.
Well, yeah, and the audience loves Alex Belushi.
Audience. I hope you still love me, audience. Audience.
Well, they're not that into him.
Okay.
Should have paid him more money.
They're so not that into him.
So.
Speaking of farts, I don't know.
I thought
that was
pretty
funny.
Things are going all right so far. So far, so good. Brett Cullen on the show tonight. Brett Cullen is in the new film Puncture. It's him and Chris Evans.
Right.
It's in limited release at the moment. Hopefully getting a wider one because I'd like to see it.
Would be nice.
And
I
want to say it's in New York, L.A., and Houston. And what's funny about being in Houston, I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that Brett Cullen's like the mayor. Of
yes.
Him and Dennis Quaid, they run that town.
Might have a few things to do with that, yes.
So,
turns out you can pick the cities in some aspects if you're a little bit involved.
A lot of topics for tonight's show.
Well, start from the first topic.
Well, first I want to talk about those tribute videos that are going out this week. For our fans listening, I'm going to Los Angeles this weekend. Going to get a little sun.
Fun in the sun.
Have some coffees.
Some coffees.
Everyone wants to do coffee or like...
So, wait. No one ever wants to say, let's do cheesesteaks?
Well... Not a lot of fat people in the Los Angeles.
You wait, because I don't want you saying I just was there. I don't want to get out there with you when you say, well, I was just there. So wait.
Oh, that's going to happen. Oh, I'm going to be calling you from Philly's Fest. I'm going to be like,
listen here. Next to the ramen I can afford, my one good meal a week is going to be Philly's Best.
I'll be calling you all weekend when I got some whiz on that steak.
Can you sext me a picture of the cheesesteak?
I can sext you a picture of it. Yes.
I just want to see the cheese
Speaking
steak.
Of sexting, yes. I want to talk about Two Cranky Guys.
Yes, that's a good segue.
Coming from a couple of people who know about sexting.
Right.
Oh, Brett God. Watson, Bruce Frett. So I'm convinced. These guys are the new Siskel and Ebert. I thought about this for a while.
Yes.
This is not something I just am throwing out there. This took a lot of thought. You know I'm a huge Gene Siskel fan.
You are, yes. You posted and, that ditty about him
yes,
recently.
And I thought they would do him proud.
Yeah, I
They're
think
doing
so.
Him proud, I think. Yeah. TwoCrankyGuys.com, their new review of 50-50 is out. Brett Watson convinced me to see 50-50. I thought it was going to be another Seth Rogen comedy thing, and
yeah.
I've been told no.
Okay.
So.
I almost saw 50-50,
did
actually.
You?
Well, it was that or Moneyball.
Oh, the Moneyball.
And my uncle wanted to see Moneyball, so that's what happened. But I did suggest 50-50. I was a Third Rock from the Sun fan, so I'm like, eh. Maybe I'll like the Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I want to know your thoughts, because I know you read The Two Cranky Guys, Steve, and I don't know if Alex reads, but the pictures look nice.
Yeah. What I like about their column is they definitely, I think I like the crank about them. And I also like...
Yes, they are cranky.
I like the format. It's a very good format. They give you a good overview of what it's about, and then they tell you... You know,
well,
give you
Bruce Frett, the TV Guide, and Brett Watson, formerly of Entertainment
Weekly. Right.
And, you know, I think here's the thing. Siskel and Ebert were very critical a lot of the time of writing.
Yes.
They're very critical of the acting. So there's a big difference there. So it's nice. But it's nice to hear two guys that aren't afraid to mix it up with people that they may have to bump into all the
time.
I
was going to say, that take some stones to criticize actors. I mean, look at you. Anyone who criticizes you.
Pat Tobias wanted us to know, by the way, Puncture's filmed in Houston and is about Houston lawyers. So that may be why the Houston release.
That has, yes.
For Brett Cullen's film
sense.
Puncture, which got pretty good reviews.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to see it when it's released.
And Brett Cullen was on Persons of Interest the other night. I have a feeling his character's going to be recurring.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't integral to the part. And he's a big character actor,
yeah.
Brett Cullen.
Brett
you
Cullen.
Don't just waste a Brett Cullen.
So, no.
And
no.
He plays the friend of Michael Emerson who starts up this company, this Persons of Interest. They use this new technology and stuff. It's a little confusing, but, you know, the show's not that bad.
No, not at all.
And actually, I'd say out of all the pilots I've seen this season...
Yeah, what do you like?
That's the one I like the most, and I'm going to explain why, is because right away I've said, okay, I'll keep watching. The other ones I'm like, well, I'm going to keep watching, but I'm going to see if it gets better or worse.
Right. So this one engages you a little bit
yeah,
more. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I like Up All Night so far, but I'm not, like, hooked.
You know what I like about
There's
Up
no
All Night?
Hook. For Up All Night yet for me. I don't mind watching it. I'm waiting for it to heat up, but if it doesn't heat up in a few weeks, I may not watch
it. Not going to get on your
it.
DVR
It may not be
list.
A religious
Won't
thing.
Won't be on your DVR list?
No.
I'll actually tell you why I do enjoy parts of Up All Night.
I love Maya Rudolph.
That, well, I'm not completely sold on her, but I do enjoy her. I actually kind of like. I've got
You're
other.
You're not sold on Maya Rudolph?
Well, not like you are. I don't want to.
Classless.
I like her. I'm not obsessed with her like you. I was going to point out the chemistry that I get between Bill Arnett and Christine
They actually
Applegate.
Are very good together.
Hey, that's
and
what I was going to say.
I have never been as big of a Bill Arnett fan as everyone else. I mean, I've always liked him. Don't get me wrong, but people like bend over at
right.
his temple.
Right.
And,
I'm not
pray to the gods of Will Arnett.
I'm not at the bend over backwards phase of Bill Arnett, but I like his chemistry with Christina Applegate.
You like to bend over backwards?
No, Mr. Fluffer, Alex Luisi.
Yeah, Alex.
Should we go? Should we segue to that?
Alex
Luisi?
Told us he's going to go to Los Angeles and become a fluffer.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize they don't really need women fluffers out there. Well, maybe he did realize it, actually. He just wants to fluff some balls. He is wearing those Ed Hardy pants.
I'll tell you a good porn story.
2006 called. They want their pants back,
We actually had a porn lesson in one of my television classes, and it was all about how to ruin your career by doing porn. And even if you're a gaffer in porn, if that gets out that you work for a porn production company, you're done. So I imagine fluffers are a good way to crucify that career. Yeah, it's pretty filthy. I don't know. I'm gonna mulligan that comment you made earlier tonight. Just be like, you didn't know.
Bruce wants to know if his loins are burning because we're talking about him on the show. Bruce
no,
Frank.
No, his merkin is though.
Speaking of merkin, I want to get to this.
Jay Alexander.
So TV Guide, if you go online to TVGuide.com, they've posted a new new article. William Keck.
Yeah.
William Keck, I think, replaced Michael Acilio. And what William Keck does is he gets, like, the juice. He gets the gossip, more or less.
Right.
He gets the spoilers, and he talks to the stars and tries to get some gossip. He's the gossip guy, in my mind.
The pot stirrer.
Yeah, he's not a reviewer so much. Yeah, right. He's the pot stirrer.
Pot stirrer,
so
yeah.
Jason Alexander told him he just bought a $3,000 toupee. He's planning on buying another $3,000 toupee, and he's doing it because he wants hair, and it's going to get him more roles. And then he made a comment that really pissed me off. He said, but the guy on the show should be bald. He should have been bald because he's a dork.
And that show was?
So, Harry's Law. So,
okay.
Steve, as a balding man, or a pretty much bald
man. I'm pretty much there.
How do you feel about a guy whose show that when he was on Seinfeld, your favorite show
My
ever.
Favorite show of all time.
How do you feel about Jason Alexander right now?
He's kind of a merkin at the moment. And you know what?
Not only is he a merkin in my mind, he for that comment alone, he's on my blacklist.
Yeah, I'm done with him. Oh, you know what? Maybe he can still do the Jenny Craig commercials. Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig?
Jenny Craig.
Okay.
Or wait, I don't know. One of those things men should not be doing.
Yeah, he can continue doing that. And another thing.
Well, that's the only offers he's getting, I guess.
Listen, not only that, everyone knows him as George to begin with. So what's the matted down hair going to do for him?
He's got nothing.
You know.
Well, you know what? I don't know how many offers Jason Alexander's getting. So he thinks getting hair is going to give him better offers. Maybe more acting talents will get you better offers. I don't know.
Because you know what? The club that he's in of balding gentlemen who do get the fake hair, they're actually a little bit more talented than him at the moment.
You know what, too? Like, if you're going to do those commercials like he does, like the Weight Watchers.
Right.
Why don't you just do some Hair Club for Men commercials?
Propecia?
Is Cy Sperling still around? I don't even know.
God, hope not.
Because, look, pal, when I go bald, and I am going to go bald. No merkins for me.
Yeah, no merkin.
I'm not going to be wearing vagina hair on my head.
No $3,000 merkin for you?
No.
I'm kind of out of the Jason business.
I'm glad, because I had a feeling that you'd maybe be torn.
No.
And I didn't want you to be torn. I wanted to hear a definitive,
I'm out.
Alexander
And let me tell you why. Two people, Tim Gibbons and Larry David.
I wonder what Larry's thinking. I bet, you know, I wonder how tight Larry and Jason really are anyway.
I think a lot of season two of Curb was actually real stuff.
I wouldn't doubt it.
So I don't think there's any love lost.
Oh, you know what? And I forgot, though. We were talking about the tribute videos, and we got sidetracked.
Right.
So we did tribute videos this week that will air as shows while I'm in Los Angeles.
Correct.
For Sam Simon, Michael Whitehorn, Peter Tolan, and Phil Rosenthal. Finished those last night. We've been, as I like to say, manning the lighthouse,
if you will. Or we've been, as you want to say, up all night.
Up all night,
because,
right.
Let me tell you.
Very punny.
Yeah, very punny. Well, Gene Shalit would be proud.
oh, not Bruce Fred?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to go right to Gene on this one.
To the pro?
Yeah, to the pro. No, let me tell you, I had this thought about that last night, and I was just like, oh, God, as salty as I'd get, like, about 3:30 in the morning, glad I did this project.
I think they ended up pretty good.
They did, and I'm glad, because now I know that when you do something to this magnitude, everything's got to be labeled.
Filming for hours.
Yeah.
Editing is...
Well, it's like I'm now anal retentive. Clips edited precisely, not vague sentence fragments, but exact clip names, so that when you are searching through 60 plus clips, you know what you're looking for.
I actually look pretty good on film.
By the way, speaking of good,
you know how much photoshopping I had to do for you?
Yeah,
a lot.
Well, you know how much cutting you did for him?
I had to take the mole off your face.
You had to cut him out of so many clips.
I did, actually.
Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah,
we had to start using Letterboxd to get you out of the way.
Actually, what I was going to do is they had this little graphic. It was one of the little speech bubbles. I was just going to put up over Alex's head. Where's golf time?
Well, speaking of golf, Brett Cullen's a big fan.
Yeah, I know. But I did want
to... He's a big golfer. And speaking of hair, the man has a good...
Does he have a good head?
Set of head of hair. He's
got a good head of hair.
Just like me.
No. Oh, Louis.
You know what? I think you are kind of maybe balding.
Not a chance.
I've seen spots.
No.
Ooh.
I've seen spots.
Nope.
Spots. Louis, it's okay.
When are you going to get a haircut, by the way?
Should I get a haircut before LA?
You look like... You look like Billy Ray Cyrus right now.
And not the good version of Billy Ray Cyrus?
Yeah, no...
What was the good version of Billy Ray Cyrus?
I think pre-Hannah Montana.
Pre-Hannah Montana?
Yeah.
No, that's what he looks like with the mullet guy.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm still confused on when Billy Ray Cyrus was great.
I don't know. I was being hopeful.
Oh.
Maybe
you were just being folksy.
Yeah,
just trying to be nice for the conversation purpose.
Yes, I didn't want to be mean. I don't want your audience to throw eggs at me, because that happened here.
The audience is very eggerific.
They got
their eggs loaded. Oh, okay.
It doesn't help that our intern goes to Ultra and gets some eggs.
You hit
before
me in the chest.
Oh, calm down, people. Calm down.
Yeah.
So let's also talk about... Well, I was going to ask you actually about pilot season and the new shows.
Yes.
Anything you like? Anything?
You know what?
Anything you've seen, because we've been working so much?
The only really new show I've seen is Up All Night.
And you don't mind it?
I would definitely tune in.
I didn't hear you bitch at all.
No, not at all.
During Two and a Half Men, I hear you bitch all the time.
Man. Man. Listen, as far as Two and a Half Men goes, I'll put it to everyone like this.
That show sucks without Charlie Sheen. And you are not a Charlie Sheen fan,
but
I think you have to admit, way worse without Chuck.
Actually, I got a better way to put it. I'm friends with Roseanne on this one. If I have...
Wait, she didn't make an appearance in the pilot?
No.
I mean, in the premiere?
No,
what happened?
She didn't. No, and I'm going to tell you... I'll tell you this much. Yeah, if it's between Two and a Half Men and Roseanne, I'll tell you
what
party I'm
going to. Chuck Lorre tried to get Roseanne
really?
To play the Berta's character.
Really?
I didn't know this. And Roseanne turned it down because of money and screen time. So's the rumor.
Isn't she playing for the Bears now?
That was almost funny.
Oh, God.
He works on that all day, though.
You know, you're
that was 12 hours of work.
You're thinking of John Goodman, because he always wore that Bears shirt on the show.
You're thinking of Laurie Metcalf.
She's
playing for the Bears.
Did he get Laurie Metcalf confused with Jay Cutler? What happened?
So, who else has followed this Amanda Knox story?
Who?
Oh, who? Really?
Was she acquitted or something? I don't know.
Yeah, she was. Someone went on Facebook today, obviously, and saw a bunch of people talking about somebody he knows nothing about.
No, I actually tell you what happened.
What happened?
I was listening to the radio on the way over. And between
songs...
And you're
like, who the hell are these people talking about?
Between songs, they go, Amanda Knox was acquitted or whatever. Knox, when is it not?
Yeah,
or not?
Knox.
Okay, well, I spent a
lot... All right, well, she's from here.
Okay.
She lived in Italy.
All right.
Okay, she has a boyfriend, Rafael Solicito.
Right.
Could be a cousin.
No.
Not related to you.
Not everyone's related to you as much as you want them to be. Anyways, she lived with this woman, Meredith Kircher. And Meredith Kircher was stabbed to death in her bedroom.
Right.
So
kind of hurt.
They put the blame on Knox. They gathered that evidence was, whatever, they put the blame on her. Today there was a verdict. And in Italy, mind you. This was in Italy, so this is Italian courts. And they acquitted her, which is kind of shocking.
Yes.
But Donald Trump said he knew Amanda Knox was innocent from, this is before the verdict.
Right.
And he goes, I know deep in my heart she's innocent. And then Donald goes, so boycott Italy until she's found innocent. Boycott Italy.
Okay, you know what's wrong with that answer? You can't say something stupid like, I know in my heart. You know what? I don't think any lawyer is going, well, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my client's innocent because I know in my heart.
There was actually a group that came together and named themselves Friends of Amanda. Oh. And they flew out to Italy, which is 9 hours from Seattle. They flew out there, they rented a suite, and they waited through the night for the court's ruling.
She's from Seattle?
No, the group.
Maybe Evergreen College.
The Evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Friends of Amanda is made up of parents of her high school classmates or friends from college and high school,
right,
and sympathizers from around the country. Some never met the young Seattle woman, including Rochelle, who joined the group 2 years ago after learning about Knox in the news.
I think she did it.
So.
You know what? I just have kind of checked out on the news lately.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I'm one to say if she did it or not, because I don't know enough about the case.
I mean, aside from reading the Huffington Post and the weird news on the HuffPost, I don't catch the news. I don't know.
In my heart, I think she did it.
Oh,
by the
God.
Way, Monday Night Football has pulled Hank Williams Jr.'s famous opening.
Yes.
Because he compared Obama to Hitler.
Well, good. I'm glad they pulled it. What kind of comparison is that?
So there's a video of it, though.
Okay.
So I wanted to know if you wanted to hear what Hank has to say.
Let's hear it in context.
Okay, well, he's on Fox News.
Your favorite channel.
You know what?
Yeah.
I thought about this long and hard day, too.
Yeah.
I actually don't hate Bill O'Reilly.
No, you've always not hated him. You just never agree with him.
Never agree with him, but I don't. About him that where I just can't hate him. Like Glenn Beck, I hate.
Right.
Greta Van Strussen, traitor, hater.
Right.
Traitor. Sean Hannity, hater.
This goes back to high school.
Bill, I don't hate.
Even in high school, you never hated Bill O'Reilly because that's what always make like
as hate. Crazy as he is.
Yeah.
Like when he says, don't tax me too much or maybe I'll quit my job and won't give my job. I won't create jobs for the economy.
You know what? My favorite Bill O'Reilly line is he sometimes threatens guests. Like
yeah.
He'll say he'll beat you up.
Yeah.
I will get up and beat you up. And
or he tells you, when are you going to learn?
Yes.
When are you going to learn?
Or
which means when are you going to listen to Bill?
Or he tells you to do it live.
Country music royalty, and he's been the voice of Monday Night Football for over 20 years. But it's not all about music for this country superstar. He knows a little about politics, too.
That's right. And join us right now to break down the...
Very little.
Very little.
Very little, Steve says.
Yeah.
The 2012 GOP field is country singer superstar Hank Williams.
Whoa, can we calm down on...
Superstar.
Country and superstar in the same sentence. You know, if country's so fucking great...
Yes.
And I'm not hating on country music, but if it's so great, then why does Taylor Swift make pop versions of her country songs for the radio?
That's a good point.
To make more money?
You mean you can't boot Scoot and Boogie at the club? Is that what's going
well,
on?
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. So anyways, here we go.
Williams Jr., good morning to you, sir.
Hi there, guys.
Hi there, guys. How you doing? It's Hank Williams the Third.
Where what? Are you?
I was just letting him.
Oh, I'm sitting here in Nashville.
I'm sitting here in Nashville fucking my girlfriend, who's also my mother.
The little studio.
Okay.
Your body language says leave you alone.
Well, you don't fuck with me, pal. That's all I got to tell you. Hank Williams, sir.
I said.
Hands across.
Yeah, whatever.
You're shaking us off. Okay.
Hey, since you
I'd rather be there looking at Gretchen.
I gotta
talk about how hot the chick is in the studio, or else people are gonna think I'm a queer.
Wait, did he just call?
Don't think I'm a queer. I want the hot chick, not Greta Van Strussen. It's some hot blonde chick.
Okay.
But he's like, don't think I'm a queer or nothing, because I want to do the broad in the studio. I wish I was there right now. I'd do it real good. Yeah, we use dildos and stuff, but yeah, I ain't gay.
Those dildos,
I ain't one of them fags.
Were those dildos made in China or America?
I don't know. But Hank Williams trying to prove what fag he's not.
Right.
Because we were really doubting him, by the way. Because
we really cared.
Good morning to you,
too. I wish you were here to rate me as well.
To you, too.
Yeah.
Let's just have a little
How
intimate discussion right here. I'd love to pick
Go
your
right
brain
ahead.
About politics.
I'd love to pick your tits. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, so I'll start with an easy question. Who do you like in the GOP race?
I like you, you sexy bitch.
Nobody.
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 Next
Nobody.
Question.
Next question. Are you ready for some football?
Wow.
Nobody? You remember the golf game they had, ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah.
Remember the golf game?
Banger.
That was one of the biggest political mistakes ever.
What? You played golf with a Negro. You play golf with an aggro, that is a political mistake. I tell you what.
Listen, Foghorn Leghorn.
I tell you what. You play golf with one of them colored folk.
Oh, yeah.
You know that's why I hate that John Boehner played golf with.
Yeah.
There's no other reason. God forbid.
Yeah.
You know, watching, it just didn't go over.
You mean when John Boehner played golf with President Obama?
Oh yeah. That's what I'll be saying when I come to that studio and rape you, Brett. Oh yeah.
Does he realize the South already rose again? I mean, we're done with we're done with Dixie and the Mason-Dixie
line. He's trying to get to rise another time. That Confederate flag might as well be right behind him.
What did you not like about it? It seems to be a really pivotal moment for you.
Come on. It'd be like Hitler playing golf with Netanyahu, okay?
Okay.
Not hard.
What?
Hitler playing golf with Netanyahu.
Yeah, there's really no misconstruing
that. That's like Weird Al Yankovic hanging out with Yahoo Sirius. That's what that's like, I tell you what. I tell you.
This guy's obviously not too bright because he would know that Monday Night Football that airs on that little channel called ABC, they might like Barack Obama.
Yeah, I tell you what.
And even like or not or being indifferent, you can't just make stupid comments like that.
I tell you what, Steve, why don't you shut your ass up, boy, before I come over there and I'll do what I do with Greta to you.
What is that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that legal in the state?
Mm-hmm. Squeal like a pig.
I was going to say, keep your bestiality away from me.
Look. And I love people from the South. This has nothing to do with against people from the South.
Just
this has
Hank
to do with
Williams.
Hank Williams Jr.
You sound a lot like him.
Well, he's a retard.
So you're good at sounding like a retard?
I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
In the country this shape is in, the shape this country's in, I mean.
I don't understand that analogy, actually.
I'm glad you don't, brother, because a lot of people do. Well, you know,
was Billy Bob Tim feeding him lines?
More than likely.
BBT?
Yeah.
He was like, I tell you what, Hank, you should call him Hitler. Because that's what he is. He's that Adolf Hitler.
No, because if he were talking to BBT, he'd go B-H-O.
They're the enemy.
Who's the enemy?
Obama!
He's the gosh dang enemy.
Let me tell you something
about that Negro man.
That guy that over half the country voted for, right?
Are you kidding? The Three Stooges.
That's only
the
two.
The one that makes the most sense is Herman Cain. Herman Cain makes more sense.
So you do have a favorite. Herman Cain of...
I like the black guy that's popular this week. Last week, I liked Rick Perry.
Wow.
The week before that, I liked that broad, that Michelle Bachmann.
This guy's making Fox News sound liberal. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
The guys who are and gals who are running for president.
Right now.
Okay.
Right now, he makes more sense than any of them.
Because last time around, you were a supporter of Governor Sarah Palin.
Boy, was I.
Do you want her to get in this time?
I don't know. You know,
I don't know. I liked her back then, but I've jerked off to her so much since last time that I don't know. She's kind of old news. I like jerking off to Herman Cain now.
Like I said, guys, they've turned a lot of people off. Look at USA Today poll. 89% said Congress should be completely replaced.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with them. You know, the health care bill left. It's not going to fly either. It's going to be.
I don't want people getting that damn health care. The lines are going to be flooded when I got to go for my lung cancer from all that chew I do.
Yeah, it's a historic election. I know that.
A lot of people are motivated.
So one thing I'm gathering from your very emphatic statement this morning is that you are not a big fan of the parties coming together at all to kind of try and find compromise.
No.
What? No.
All right. Let's talk about Monday Night Football.
We're more polarized than we've ever been, guys. You know it. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We're polarized. You know that.
He looks like he's putting sugar on a lot of other things.
I was about to say.
Hank could lose a few.
Yeah, well, you
We're
didn't. You didn't because
right
you used the name of one of the most hated people in all of the world to describe the president, which
yeah, that is true. But I'm telling you like it is. That, you
know, I was going to say, who's that hated person? Was that Hitler or Obama?
I was.
Which one are they talking about on Fox News?
You can't ever tell what that
You used Obama's name.
Yeah. No,
that just wasn't a good thing. It just didn't fly.
It didn't fly. Right. Nothing flies with Hank Williams III.
Throw me the pigskin.
Hank Williams III.
Dude, he's just a dick.
Yeah. How do you like those comments, huh?
Well, you know what? Really, like, just not educated.
I can't wait until people. Well, oh wait, no one is buying his albums.
I was gonna say.
Hold on, I got a phone call. Let's see what's going on here.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Matthew, it's Brett Cullen.
Hi, Brett. How you doing? I hope you're not a Hank Williams III fan. I think that's a no.
Well, I'm not a big country western. I mean, I like some country western, but I'm not a big country western fan. But no, I don't even know. I just tuned in, so I just heard you guys blasting him, and that's all right by me because
well,
it's not my
joke. Well, Hank Williams III was on Fox News, and he compared Obama to Hitler.
Well, then he's a dick.
Yeah, well, basically. So, Brett, I'm very happy to have you. I wanted to get you for a while. I hear you are very friendly with a couple people we've had on, actually.
Well, I just spoke to my friend Chris McDonald about 2 minutes ago. I called him, and he's in a bar up in downtown L.A. and said, come join me. And I said, no, I'm doing Matthew's show. I listened to you the other night.
Oh, well, that's good. Chris having only good things to say, I hope?
Yeah, he had great things to say. He said he had a blast with you guys. I mean, I was listening to the show. It was hysterical.
I was going to say, he's probably like, oh, that motherfucker, come to the bar. Come to the bar.
No, you guys are bringing up shit, and I was going, oh, my God, that's right. You know, because Chris and I have been, you know, we've been friends since we were both young bucks out here in Hollywood. And, you know, it's one of those things where you run into people, and, you know, he and I have remained in touch, but you kind of go, oh, shit, you're still here. You know, because there's a lot of guys that fall off the map, you know. It's like you've been around, you work, you're working actors, you do a lot of stuff, and then you get, you know, people won't hire you, and you sort of drift away. But, you know, Chris and I have managed to stay in there and keep doing the good fight, you know.
I'm just hoping to get on the map. I just want a place on the map. Connecticut's fine, Rhode Island, whatever. Just on
well,
the map.
Well, you're in Chicago, aren't you?
Well, we're moving, yes, I'm moving to L.A. in a month. Or three weeks.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be
out. Welcome to La La Land, baby.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking of taking up some surfing and some
Well, you know, I'll teach you. I surf my whole life. So,
can
I mean, I'm a Texan, but I surfed all over the world. So
I was
going to give you some surf lessons.
Can you teach a fat guy how to surf, though? Is that even plausible?
Yes, it is. There's some really big fat guys out there surfing every day in Malibu, man. Can you do a push-up?
Can I do a push-up? Yes.
Yeah.
I can do a push-up.
If you can do a push-up, I can get you up on a board.
I was going to say, am I going to have to do more than one push-up? Because then
well,
we
if you
want to
ride more than one wave, yes. But the initial... The initial pop-up is a push-up, basically.
Oh, very good. Well, then I can learn. Do you have any, like, now surfing, that could be dangerous, though, right, Brett? Has it ever been dangerous for you, or are you just, like, that good?
Well, when I was, like, 17, I drowned once. But that was surfing, giant waves down in Mexico in a place called Puerto Escondido. But, you know, I just got caught in a bad situation. And but generally, no. I mean, if you're smart and you can swim, you can stay out of trouble unless there's this big great white that wants to take a bite out of you. Otherwise, it's okay.
Have you seen any, like, big great whites while you're surfing?
Never seen a great white. I've seen some hammerheads. I saw some bull sharks in Fiji. But for the most part, it's pretty it's not that bad. You know, there's sharks everywhere. People. I mean, I go walk in the water in Venice Beach where I live, and, you know, I see things darting around. I realize they're little tiny sharks, and they're everywhere. Sharks are like fish. I mean, well, they are fish. That's stupid. I mean, but, you know, they're in the water. There's, you know, it's sort of like they say in California, you're nowhere, like, you can't be anywhere in California without being about, like, I think 3 feet from a spider. So it's the same thing in the water. There's sharks everywhere. They're part of the ocean. And, you know, they tend not to want to eat people. They like fish. But every once in a while, they mistake you for, you know, a seal.
Well, there's
I kind of look like a seal and sound like one. So
there's a lot of meat on Matt, let me tell you.
Well, we'll just keep you out of a wetsuit.
Brett's talking me out of going to L.A. He's like, there's spiders every 3 feet. And like Carrie tells me, Carrie's like, scorpions and rattlesnakes everywhere. And I'm like,
I've seen one rattlesnake.
Okay.
One, well, a couple, but one rattlesnake that was near me, and that was at a golf course once. And,
oh, you like golfing, Brett?
Yeah, I'm a big golfer. I surf and I golf. Those are my two big sports.
What's like your favorite course out there, or some of your favorites?
Well, Bel Air Country Club is a great track. I think Riviera is a great track. L.A. Country Club is a great track. For public courses, Los Verdes is a great track down in Palos Verdes. One of my favorite courses that not many people play or know about is north of Santa Barbara called La Purisima, where they have the it's the regional Q school for the PGA and also the U.S. Open qualifying regionally, and they play it there a lot. So, and it's like $50 to play, and it's a public track, but it's just an amazingly hard golf course, and you know, it's fair, but it's just, you know, it's a hard course to play because of the design. You know, it's the greens are fast, and you know, you have to know how to play the game in order to score well there. So, I mean, I play all over the place. I've played all over the world, and I just love golf because it's the most difficult game to play, which is why every great athlete after he retires takes up golf, because they go, oh, I can do that.
You think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm bringing a golf pro out with me, actually. I'm going to be living with a golf pro.
You're going to be with a golf pro when you come out?
Yes.
Well, good. Yeah. You play?
Not well. But I never thought I would be good at it either, so that's the good news.
Well, I didn't either. I started playing golf with a six-pack of beer and, you know, a bag of smoke. So, you know, that was my idea of fun, you know. Go out and get hammered on the golf course and just hit the ball like I thought you hit it like a baseball bat.
Yeah, me too. Steve made a good point. I'm great at mini golf. And that six-pack of beer and the smoke, that's always with me at mini golf, yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Well, you know what's funny, too, and I want to get into your career, but now this will be a transition, but at the same time talking about what we're talking about. Is it true that you kind of came up with Dennis Quaid? And I know he's a big golfer.
Yes, Dennis is one of my closest friends. He and I've known Dennis since I was 17. We grew up about 3 miles from each other in Houston. But we never met until I got to the University of Houston. And he always tells this, it's a pretty stupid story. But, you know, I was surfing. I graduated high school. I went to Madison High School in Houston, which is where Vince Young went. And I graduated high school. I had hair down in my ass, a little goatee, and, you know, and I went out to California because every summer I would work at the Shell gas station at Willabin and Post Oak. And those of you in Houston are listening will know that gas station. But I'd work there all year and save like $300-$500, and then in the summer I'd just take off for 2.5-3 months and go surfing wherever I could go, Mexico or California. And my brother called me and told me I was accepted to a school because I didn't think anybody would take me because I was a pretty bad student in high school. And I got accepted at U of H, University of Houston. So I say, okay, and my brother convinces me to take drama because I'd done a play in high school, one play. And there's a great man there, he said, and his name was Cecil Pickett, who ended up being my mentor. And Dennis's and Randy's and Brent Spiner's and Tommy Schlamme and a whole slew of people. But so I end up going to the university, and they had a thing there that was mandatory in the drama department, if you were in the theater department. Every Friday at 3 o'clock, they had a thing called the Red Mask Players. And you had to go to it. And they had plays and speakers and stuff. And it was the first Friday, and I showed up, and I had just been down at Surfside, Texas, where I used to go surfing. I had sand on my feet. I was in flip-flops, surf trunks, and a T-shirt. My hair was down on my ass. And Dennis was, you know, the only guy. I was a little freaked out when I first went to theater school because there was a lot of gay guys, and I'd never really been around that. So I looked at the dentist because I thought he was straight, and I said, hey, man, what the hell's going on here? And he looks at me, and he goes, well, this is the lab. You have to be here. You have to be here. And he describes everyone. You know, he says, when I first saw Brett, he had hair down to his ass. He had sand on his feet, flip-flops, surf trunks, and a T-shirt. And he said, you know, this guy's going to last 3 months. And personally for me, I cut my hair eventually and took acting seriously. And that's how he and I met.
You did pretty well. You're doing pretty well. Thomas Schlamme, though, it's funny you bring him up. Is that how you got the role on West Wing?
No, actually. I actually went and read for that role, and Bradley Whitford was in the room.
Yep.
I guess he was shadowing the director at the time. And another friend of mine, John Sacred Young, was a consulting writer-producer on the show at the time. And after I read, you know, they said I did a great job, and John sort of said, you know, you should grab this guy. This guy's really good, because I'd done a series for John, and that's kind of how that happened. I mean, maybe Tommy had some, but I think at that point, Tommy and and I'm going blank on the other dude's name who created the show. They were gone.
Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron. I think they had moved on. And so I don't think Tommy had much to do with it. I know Tommy, and he's always been very, very flattering and very supportive of me, and he's supportive of everybody that came out of U of H, but supportive of what I've been doing. And I think someone recently told me that I've really grown into quite an actor. And
yeah,
I was flattered by that, because, you know, I think of Tommy as, you know, quite a big deal. Him and Brent Spiner were you know, past us. They were always the legendary guys we heard about.
Yeah, Brent.
Him and Randy and Dennis.
Brent did a thing or two.
Pardon me?
Brent Spiner's doing okay. He did a thing or two.
Yeah.
Those Star Trek checks are still coming in. he's set. You know what was funny, though? You were great on West Wing, but you played this Republican that was running for president, or you were at least in the primaries.
I was the vice president. I was running with Alan Alda.
Yes, yes. And so your character, not like quick-witted, I would say, would be the best way to put it. I don't think you played him dumb, but he was definitely more conservative.
The funny thing is the hair department, the woman that was in the hair department, I knew very well. I'd worked with a few times. And when I met her, I said, look, what I want you to do is, because my hair was sort of long, and she goes, should we cut it? And I said, trim it a little bit, but I want you to tease it, like really tease the top of it, and then just do a comb over, and then spray it like really bad Fox newscasters. And so I had the look going that I wanted, and then, you know, I did the first season that I was on the show, and then the second season, they this is a great story about, you know, that show, as I said to my manager and agent, said, well, you should get a raise. I mean, you've recurred one season, they should pay you. So they asked them about it, and they laughed at my agent. And she said, why are you laughing at me? And she goes, well, you know, Marley Matlin's done like 25 episodes before we gave her a raise, and Brett's done like, you know, 6. So it's not going to happen. And you go, well, we don't know if he's going to come back. And they said, look, here's the script. This is the first, you know, episode he's in. Just have him read it. Just have him read this one scene, which I read. And it was where they finally gave this character sort of his purpose, which was, I was a conservative Republican and sort of the right-wing religious type. And what was cool about it was the scene they gave me was the scene that, you know, you kind of got this guy who's kind of a good old boy, southern fella, who, you know, is asking this sort of guy who represents a lobbyist that represents all these ministers in this right-wing religious group, you know, to back off and to trust him. And you kind of get the impression that Governor Sullivan wasn't that quick-witted until the very end, when he looks at the guy and he goes, you know what I hate about campaigns? And the guy is shaking his hand. He goes, what? And he goes, surprises. I don't want any. And he realized this guy's a mean son of a bitch, and he'll rip his head off.
Yeah.
And at that point, I went, all right, I like this. I'll do it. I don't care what they pay me, because it was just a great scene. But the writing on that show was so good that you didn't care what you got paid. You were just happy as an actor to be able to say those words.
Yeah, no, I thought you were great on that show. But another thing I wanted to ask you is, you started out and you got a lot of like bit parts at the beginning, like a lot of actors do. Then you did the Thornbirds, but then you also, I remember, you did Falcon Crest. What was your big break in your mind, at least at that point in time, at the beginning of your career? What was the one where you were like, okay, this is going to help me get more roles, and this is something meaty, and I could show off my acting chops?
Well, the Thornbirds was an important, you know, it's the second highest rated miniseries in the history of television. So that in itself was kind of cool. We didn't realize it at the time. And I also got the, you know, I wasn't playing an American. We were doing, you know, really bad Australian accents, but we attempted them. You know, I look back on it now, and it's still, you know, women just swoon over that miniseries, and because it was, you know, very romantic. But I think the Thornbirds, after that, I jumped into Falcon Crest, and, you know, that was still kind of a hot show. You know, there was Falcon Crest and Dynasty and Dallas and Knott's Landing, which were sort of the hot shows for that Lorimar group. And that was kind of cool. What I thought it did for me, I didn't think of it as like, oh, wow, this is really going to kickstart my career, is it paid for my first house. And to me, I was like, okay, I'm an adult because I bought a house. And it paid for that. And I was, you know, stoked about that and thought that was, you know, one of the most profound things. And I only did two seasons on that show, and then I sort of opted out. Because as an actor, I started to think, you know, this isn't really what I want to do. I mean, as much as it was a good-paying job, and I was out there every week and getting seen by, you know, millions of people, I still felt slightly, I thought there was more to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, no. Now, that's the question I had for you. You've done a lot of TV, but you've also done a lot of movies. And
right.
That's a hard thing to balance and a hard thing to do. Did you kind of feel like with movies it was, I don't want to say better for an actor, but you get to like, you get a little more meatier of roles with films than TV usually, especially back then. And was that something you were like looking at? Did you want to do film more, or you just wanted to move on from the show?
I just wanted to play another character. You know, I started in the theater, and that, to me, that was always sort of something that was, as an actor, I wanted to explore. It was, you know, I mean, I was telling this woman this morning, I was doing an interview for this movie Puncture, which I'm sure we'll get into eventually. But
yeah, we were talking about it earlier.
It was a Texas journalist, and I said, you know, the thing about why I like television. Why, like, a lot of people go, you work all the time. And I said, well, I want to, because I like doing episodics. I like what television reminds me of, doing episodic television or doing recurring roles, is when I was in college, you know, I said to my daughter, I was talking to her about it. She's 16. She's in a performing arts school. And I said, you know, what was great about college was, you know, you go to school, you have your acting class, your dance class, your voice class, you have your science class, you do all the stuff you're taking. I said, but, you know, at 2 o'clock, you're doing a director's thesis, so you're acting in it for him. You're playing one role, and then you go and you rehearse the scene you're working for in acting class, and then you're doing another friend of yours directing scene, and then that night you rehearse the play, and you're jumping in and out of different skins constantly, and you start to sort of feel like you're doing stock, or you're in a rep company. And, you know, I was in school from 8 o'clock in the morning until midnight, you know, is when I'd get home. So it was a complete sort of theatrical extravaganza, you know, where you don't ever stop, and every day was like that, and you're working on pieces, and television's like that. Television isn't a thing where you walk in, like today we shot, walked in, the director said, okay, come here, you're going to stand here, now let's just hear the words, and you do the words, and go, okay, let's hear them again, okay, great, let's put people here, and you guys can go away, second team, stand on the marks, and we'll be shooting in 10 minutes. And, you know, you better be prepared, and that's what I think theater creates for you, and created for me, was the ability to be able to jump in to some skin that I'm, you know, some character that I'm developing or playing so quickly, and to try and find the emotional reality of it, you know, the physical reality of it so quickly because of my background in theater. So when people say, why do you do so much episodic television? I'm saying, because I feel like I can't do stock or rep because they don't pay enough for me to pay my mortgage, but television does. So I can jump into those roles and play a lot of different stuff. And to me, that's interesting, and it's, you know, gratifying. On the other hand, I would also love to be starring in a movie and getting paid $7 million so I wouldn't have to worry about money. But, you know, I do have to pay my bills, so I do as much as I can, as often as I can, because, one, I like to work as an actor, and, two, I like to pay my bills because that's the one goal I've always had. And I always thought, as an actor, I was a success if I could pay my bills.
I love that, because Steve and I just had a conversation last night, and I told my writing partner, Steve, who say hello, Steve.
How you doing?
And I told Steve, I go, what is the worst? Yeah. I told Steve, what is the worst case scenario for you for anything, moving to L.A. or being here? Where would you rather your worst case scenario happen? And he goes, worst case scenario is I can't pay the bills in L.A. And I go, but would you rather be in L.A. or would you rather be in Chicago and not be able to pay the bills? So we decide on L.A. That was but it's interesting you bring that up, because I think that's a very honest answer. I think at the end of the day, everyone worries about paying the bills. And you have a lot of actors that come out and do things and give different reasons. And I think a lot of the reason really is pay the bills.
Well, you know, you brought up an interesting you asked me what was sort of a turning point for me, you know, where I went, oh, my God, this is important. This could do something. And I remember distinctly when it happened. And I also remember distinctly that I had made a choice at that point in my life. And it was when I did Apollo 13, and I back-to-backed it with Something to Talk About. While I was shooting Apollo 13, I got Something to Talk About. And I went, oh, my God, these are two huge studio movies. you know, one with Tom Hanks and Kevin Bacon and Bill Paxton and, you know, Gary Sinise, and the other was with Julia Roberts, Duvall, Jenna Rollins, Dennis Quaid, you know, which I was getting to work with my best friend, even though we never really had a scene together, you know, and Kira Sedgwick. It was like, oh, and oh my God, now that's something.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I remember when those movies were made and they came out in the same summer, and I was with Dennis in Montana, and I got a phone call because I had hired, and I never do this, but I hired a publicist because I thought, well, I should try and get some, you know, some synergy from these movies so people will hire me more. So I'll do some publicity because I'm a little publicity shy. I can talk all day, but I don't tend to go out there and toot my own horn. And so I hired someone, and both of the movies got pushed up, so I couldn't do any magazines. I couldn't do any of this stuff. And my publicist was a friend of mine, and she called me, and I was in Montana fly fishing at Dennis's ranch. They said, look, someone at Good Morning America loves you, and they want you there Monday morning. And this was Friday. And they said, you got to fly Sunday from Bozeman, Montana to Billings, Billings to Minnesota, Minnesota to New York. And I said, all right, I'll do it. So I drive in the morning, at 5 in the morning, I go to Bozeman, get on a plane to Billings. Billings is held to go to Minnesota because of tornadoes. They hold us 45 minutes. We finally get on the plane. They said, don't worry, we've held all the planes from Minnesota to New York. So I get to Minnesota. All the planes in New York have left. And I'm going, well, I'm supposed to be in New York tomorrow morning. What am I going to do? And this woman says, sir, if you keep yelling at me, and I wasn't yelling at her, says, if you keep yelling at me, I'm calling security. And this guy behind me said, hey, bitch, he's only asking you a question. And she called security. So I grabbed my bag, ran out of there, went down to ticketing, and it was empty. And I kept ringing a bell, and finally the guy comes out, and I go, dude, I got to get to New York. Well, what can you do? And I kind of explained. I said, like, I'm an actor. You don't know who I am. But I'm going to be on Good Morning America tomorrow, and you know, I got to get there. So he goes back, he comes back, and goes, I can get you to Detroit. I said, okay, give me to Detroit. So I get on the plane, I call my publicist. She goes, I've called Good Morning America. They're going to have a limo waiting for you in Detroit, and they're going to drive you, because I got in there at like 12 o'clock or 1 in the morning. And they will drive you the 5 hours or whatever it is from Detroit to New York. So I said, okay. Flying to Detroit, can't find the limo. I call my publicist. I'm going, all right, now I'm screwed. I'm stuck in Detroit. And all of a sudden, this limo driver walks up and says, are you Brett? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, they won't let us pull up to this terminal. We got to walk down to the next one. So I get in the thing. At the time, I used to smoke cigarettes. So I said, can I smoke? He goes, yeah. So we're smoking. He goes, we got a big stretch so you could sleep. Well, these are the old stretches that are, you know, there wasn't the side seat. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and I'm over 6'2". So I can't sleep on this one little tiny seat in the back. So finally, I sit up, I move up front, and I knock on the window. The guy rolls the window, and I said, are you smoking a cigarette? He goes, yeah. And I said, you know, you don't mind me? He goes, no. We start talking. Finally, I went, can you roll this window all the way down? He goes, why? I go, I'm going to crawl up front and sit with you, because this is boring back here. So I crawled through the window, sat up front. We smoked cigarettes for 4 hours and talked, and I got to New York at 6 a.m., jumped in the shower, had breakfast, and then I went to the Good Morning America show. And I'm talking to Joan London, who had me on for 3 commercials.
Wow.
Dennis said he'd never seen anyone been on that long. And this woman knew everything about my life. And I was stunned. I mean, where I grew up, who I studied with, you know, everything that you kind of had on your website. And we were talking, and she finally said, my God, you finally, Apollo 13, something to talk about. I mean, you're finally a success. And I hadn't slept all night. And I guess because I wasn't thinking, and I just went, you know, Joan, when I left college, I said, if I could pay my bills, I thought I was a success, because not many actors can make a living. And I've made a living for, at the time, I think it was like 16 years. I said, so I thought I was a success already. I guess this is just icing on the cake, but I said, I guarantee you, next week when I get back to L.A., I'm going to have to read for something. They're not going to be offering me movies. They're not going to be saying, oh, he's a big star now. I'm just an actor, and I'm going to have to go back into the grind, and I don't mind doing that. But this is, you know, as long as I can pay my bills, I'm a success. And she was really taken back by that and said, you know, that's kind of refreshing. And that's really where I'm at. I mean, that's who I am and what I believe. I've never looked at any of it other than the fact that if I just work my ass off and can pay my bills and can put clothes on my daughter and my wife's back and put food in the refrigerator, and we can live in Venice Beach and I can surf when I want and live the life that I love, then, you know, I mean, how bad is that?
No, yeah, you're right. You're right, and I think that's great. I think Joan London may have had a crush on you, too. That's not a bad crush, though. That's not bad. Joan London.
I'm not going to tell my wife that.
No. Tell her no. But,
she said Joan London has a crush on you. Oh, my wife says that.
That's time. Okay. Yeah. Women love Joan London. You should have known. That's all right.
That's fine.
Let me tell you how cool my wife is. I'm married. She was in Apollo 13 as well, and she got pregnant on Apollo 13 and sort of retired after that. But I left, and she had to be bedridden for 3 months because we had tried to have babies. And this, our child, our daughter, who's in the kitchen as well, was a miracle because my wife couldn't get pregnant naturally. We'd done in vitro, and then she did get pregnant. So she finally comes we were shooting a Buford, South Carolina, and then we went to all these different places and ended up in Savannah, Georgia. And the last night of the shooting was my big love scene with Julia Roberts. And Julia was just a cool chick. I really like her. She's a good old Southern girl, and she and I got along great. And my wife was four months pregnant, and women would come up to her and touch her belly and go, "Any day now?" Really depressed her, to be honest. I mean, because she just was, she's pretty big. My wife's a little tiny woman. So I'm getting ready to go to work to do my big love scene with Julia, and I have my bag on my shoulder, and I gave my wife a kiss. I said, "Okay, I'll see you later," because we're shooting night. So it was like 5 in the afternoon. And I'm walking out of the hotel in Savannah, and she goes, "Wait a minute." And she pushes herself off the couch, like a pregnant woman does, And I walk back and go, "What?" And she goes, "Come here." And she grabs me, and she kisses me. And she kisses me the way a woman kisses you on the third date.
Yeah.
And I go, "What's that?" And she goes, "I want you to go to work, and I want you to kiss Julia Roberts just like that so she knows what she's missing."
Oh.
Now, it was so cool because my wife was like telling me, go for it, enjoy yourself, make this real and be good and don't hang back. And, that's why we're still together after 27 years.
I was going to say you have to deal with that probably quite a bit. Plus, I got a couple messages today on Facebook and on Twitter from women telling me how great looking you are. So, that makes me feel good when I'm getting those messages for you. That's great.
Well, tell them thank you.
Your good looks.
Tell them thank you from you.
Yes. Yeah. You know what's great, too? We have another person on this show who did an episode of...
Yeah.
Did you do Matlock?
Did a Matlock. I certainly did.
I love Matlock, Brett. That's my show. That's my jam. I even dress like Andy Griffith. So what was that like working with Andy, doing the show? It was a great show.
He's a funny character. And obviously, the Andy Griffith show was like, my wife and I used to lay in bed and watch the old reruns, in the morning, like at 10 o'clock on I don't know what channel it was, and just die. Because, Barney Fife was so fantastic. But I'll tell you a great story about Andy Griffith that really made me laugh. When, he did, and I'm going to freak you guys, got to help me. What was the movie he did with Kazan? Stranger in the Face in the Crowd?
Yes. I was going to say, you're not talking of Play the Game, where him and Liz Sheridan get it on at 85 years old. That was
No. It was Face in the Crowd. And
yes.
And I went up to him. We were shooting in a courtroom, and I said, "Andy, I got to tell you, your performance in Facing the Crowd was so amazing. It was just so fucking good. You were just great." And he looks at me and goes, because Andy talks about bits all the time, two bits. He goes, "It would have been better if Kaz would have let me done a few more bits."
I love that.
And I want to go, no, that's what made it great was that he met him at a party, and that's why he cast him.
You know what?
He was looking for this guy, and he met Andy Griffith at this party. He goes, "That's the guy."
That's pretty good. That's pretty. Yeah. You know what Chris McDonald said? He said that Andy Griffith's not. He's never won an Emmy. How's that possible?
No, imagine how pissed off he was. I think Don Knotts won 7 or something for that show. It was like
wow.
Don Knotts he won at least 5.
Well, not a ton of competition back then.
But Don Knotts was brilliant. Don Knotts is what, Andy was a straight guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it probably drove him nuts because, he was a bit of a vaudevillian comedian kind of guy. But Don Knotts, come on. can't even get close to that guy. That guy was so brilliant. And I mean, there's so few actors that can do that, to do what he did, and did it so brilliantly and on such a regular basis that you just go. I mean, you watch it now and I laugh.
I love the incredible Mr. Limpet. I die.
I've been lucky in my career. I've gotten to work with Barbara Stanwyck. I've worked with Cesar Romero. I worked with Jane Wyman. I've worked with some of the great old sort of really classic actors of that period. Yeah. And you work with them. And I'll tell you the one thing that's interesting. None of them complain about anything. They show up and they did their job.
That's nice to know. I'd like to meet people like that. Everyone I know complains about everything.
I know. Well, years ago, when I was doing Falcon Crest, I threw a party. My wife and I and my friend Tom Davies and his wife, it was his girlfriend at the time, I think. But we threw this party, and it was a 50s party. And I was torn because, you know, I didn't want to invite the whole crew of Falcon Crest and everybody because, you know, we had it at an Elks Lodge at 3rd and Western, way, you know, deep into Hollywood. And we rented this place, and so the whole line of it was, I mean, my wife made dance cards for people. It was a real 50s party. And I forget the band that was playing. It was, if she was in here, she could probably tell me, this guy. But anyway, we used to do a read-through every week on Falcon Crest, like at lunch of the next script. And so we'd done the read-through, and I finally turned. I said, all right, look, I'm throwing this party. You're all invited. The ADs have the maps and the invitations. I said, there's one thing you have to do, which is if you're going to come, you have to wear 50s clothes because you will not be, I don't care who you are, how big a star you are, you will not be allowed in unless you're wearing something from the 50s. Like it's a theme party, and you will not be let in. So the party, and I said, and this is so LA, I said, the party starts at 7 and it ends at 1. They will kick us out. It's their place. So don't come fashionably late. Just come and have a great party. It'll be fun. There's going to be booze. There's an open bar. It'll be a fantastic time. So we're putting, you know, we're frantically getting this place ready. A friend of mine brought the, remember the big moon from Moonlighting?
Oh, yeah.
He set up the big moon. We got that. He was a photographer. People could come with their dates and sit on the moon and get their picture taken. It was just this really cool party. So it starts at 7. At 7:15, the elevator door opens. And Cesar Romero walks in. There's no one there but me and my wife, Tom, and his sister, and his girlfriend, and his mom, I think. And we all look up, and there's Cesar Romero, and he walks up to me. He goes, Brad, I hope this will do. I bought the suit in 1954. And I said, yeah, Cesar, that's fantastic. He goes, I said, we're just eating some pizza before everyone shows up. He goes, can I have a piece? So we give him some pizza. And then he sits there, and then everyone starts coming in. I mean, there was like 400 people at this party, 500 people. Eventually, the paparazzi or the photographer showed up outside and started taking pictures of people. You know, Annalisa, everybody from the show came, and it was crazy. Brent Spiner came, because Brent's an old friend of mine from Houston.
Yeah.
He walks in, and he walks up to me. He goes, oh, my God, this party. And I go, what? And he goes, Cesar Romero is at this party. He goes, this is a 50s party, and Cesar Romero is here. You have no idea how fantastic this is. He danced with every woman there. He took a picture with every woman there. The guy was one of the classiest, coolest men I've ever met in my life.
That's great. You got the Joker at your party. And
the Joker,
yeah.
And he was in a 50s suit.
Well, what's great, too, is that. Well, that I guess I have to go to this topic then, because you brought up Cesar Romero. Which leads us to a Joker, which leads to you're in The Dark Knight Rises? Is that what I'm reading? Is this true?
This is true.
Brett, you're killing it. What's going on? What are you doing in that flick?
Well, if I told you that, I'd have to kill you. I signed 3 NDAs, non-disclosure agreements.
Only 3?
I'm playing a character that is it's a small supporting role, but it's a really fun part. I'll make you laugh, hopefully, if I stay in the movie. But I think I will because I'm a plot point.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good enough for me.
Nice.
Brett Cullen's a plot point. That's the news. Brett, there's so much great stuff to talk about. Like, I actually remember growing up, I loved something to talk about, actually, because great cast, great, like, I mean, Robert Duvall, Dennis Quaid, Julia Roberts, That's a great movie. Apollo 13's nothing to sniff at. Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp, you got to work with Dennis again. Did you have any?
That was the first time Dennis and I ever worked together.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew each other in college, but this is the first time we ever were on, on celluloid together. And it was a scene I had with him and Kevin where I played a saddle tramp who wants to kill Wyatt Earp. And Dennis steps up and is going to protect him, and, you know, Wyatt calls him off. And the funny story is Dennis had a driver named Bo Holden for years, and they're still friends, and, you know, occasionally they'll still work together. But Bo's a practical joker. When we did something to talk about, he actually rented a room from a house that I had rented right on the river across from Parris Island when we were in Beaufort, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Anyway, I Larry Kasdan cast me, and I go there, and, you know, I'm from Texas. I really know how to ride. I used to actually rodeo. I did a series called The Young Riders, and all the wranglers on that taught me how to rope, so I became a team roper. So Larry had asked me, can you ride? And I'm like, yeah, Larry, are you sure you can ride? And I said, yeah, I can ride. And he goes, okay, and then I got the offer. So I go to New Mexico. We're in Santa Fe, and they've done my makeup. I have a big scar on my face, and they do made me look like, you know, I've been on the road for 5 weeks on a horse. And all of a sudden, Rusty, the wrangler, I think it's Rusty Hendrickson, comes up to me. He goes, are you Brett? And I see him. He goes, you can ride? And I see him. Well, get on this horse and show me. It was really aggressive. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. And I went, okay. And I get on the horse, and the horse starts to buck a little bit. And I get off the horse, and I went, well, if you want me to ride the horse, dress him correctly. Because they had the scabbard, the rifle scabbard, in backwards. So the gun was jabbing the horse in its hind quarters. So I pulled the gun out, and I tossed it to him, and I got back on the horse, and I took off. And I rode through town, and they were, like, watching me. And I was like, I took off, took a right, took a left, came back around. You know, they were, like, watching me for 10 minutes, and I finally pulled up. And I basically put the brakes on the horse right in front of him, where the horse skidded up. I stopped. I hopped off the horse, and I said, what's the problem? And he goes, Bo Holden told me you couldn't ride. Bo! He takes off running, chasing Bo. It's like, and Bo is just killing himself because he's a teamster. No one can touch him, right?
Yeah. That's what they like to think. And you know what? They're usually right.
I just said to Rusty, I said, listen, just go steal the donuts and you'll really fuck them up.
Oh, man.
That's pretty good. Well, you know what's crazy about that, too, is Wyatt Earp, Gene Hackman, you, and then the replacements, you and Gene Hackman again. Did you enjoy working with Gene? And then my question for you about the replacements is it's great. You're obviously the villain in that movie to a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, you are the villain, I guess.
Man, I like to tell people that I was actually, you know, protecting the union man because I'm a unionist. That's the movie's about a bunch of scabs.
Yes.
But, you know, obviously they're the heroes. So, yeah, I'm the bad guy. As people like to say, hey, you're the guy that played the asshole in The Replacements.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yes. And I bet you get noticed for that a lot. But I was going to ask you, do you ever think it would be cool to be on the other side of that coin, though? Do you ever think it would be cool to be one of the funny guys in the movie, like the Orlando Jones was in there and Reese Evans? And, there's all these funny people in the movie. Faison Love, I believe, is in it. Do you ever want to be the funny guy?
Well, I've done a couple of sitcoms, and I'm funny. I'm actually kind of funny, but I'm not funny in the sitcom way, as like most actors are. But, you know, the other side of that is, I mean, I've done some roles, like I think you'll laugh at me in Batman. I made Chris Nolan and Wally and Pfister laugh a lot. But it's based on character. I've always said I'm funny if you give me a funny character. I'm not funny. Like, there are people who are just, like, you look at, like, Don Knotts can do anything, and he was funny. You know, he didn't have to have a funny line. He could turn something into a funny moment, whereas if I have a character that's funny, I can create that. What I found in that movie, and this is a great story about Gene Hackman, because I really, really respect Gene, and I think he's one of the greatest actors of our generation. And we had drinks the first night we worked together. And I said to him, I said, can we, you know, go out and get a drink? So he called his wife and said, yeah, me and a couple of guys are going to go out and have a drink. And, uh-huh, 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 right, yeah. No, it's just... us guys, honey. So we went to my hotel, and we sat down at the bar, and we had drinks. And he talked about all his career. I mean, I was, like, shaking because I was so excited to be around him and really be able to – I was asking him questions about Eastwood and all the different directors he worked with. And after we'd done that, I turned to him and I said, Gene, can I ask you a question? He said, of course. I said, you know, I'm playing kind of the prick in this movie, the bad guy. I said, when you've played a lot of bad guys, when you're playing that role, do you ever try and find the gray area? Do you ever try and find, like, really a soft moment or a place where you kind of go, he's not really a bad guy, he's just misunderstood? Or,
yeah.
What? And he said, are you kidding me? And I said, why? And he goes, relish it.
Yeah.
So that's what I've learned how to do, which, you know, if you're going to do something, grab it by the horns and run with it. Because if you're going to try and be, unless it's written in a way that it gives you that opportunity to try and explore that, it's not really worth it.
I'm glad you told that story, though, because I would have asked a question similar to that, I'm sure, when I'm in L.A., because, you know, I love acting, and I'm sure I would have been like, so let me find the human part of this character, or the soft side, yeah. And I think if you watch Gene Hackman, I mean, that he does relish it when he plays the bad guy. I think that's true, and he's good at it.
He's really fantastic at it, but he's also, I mean, there's some humor. I mean, you know, you laugh at when the bad guy gets his comeuppance, you know.
Yeah, he was great in The Firm as the he was not a total bad guy, but he was very shady. And I thought he was really good in The Firm. But you and him both have that style where you have so much charisma and charm that you can kind of smile and say a line, and it comes off very funny. It's like, wow, that guy's a dick. And it's funny.
Well, you know what? I'm flattered that you said my name in the same sentence as Gene Hackman's, because, I, like I said, I you know, the guy walks on water. Because here, to me, is the sort of litmus test. You could probably do an imitation of Brando, right?
Oh, well, everyone tries.
Right. You can do an imitation of Pacino.
Yeah. You can't do
one. Do an imitation of De Niro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody does Gene Hackman.
No. No, you can't. Yeah, that's true.
And there's a reason for that, because he's so unique and so real in what he does. And it was fascinating, and it was a great, it was a really, you know, because, you know, as much fun as we're having, I mean, the honest truth is, you know, what I do, what I want to do, who I dream of becoming as an artist, because, you know, in my life, I think every day is a learning experience. Every moment is, you know, every show, every performance, everything I do, I try and learn something. And that's why I want to continue to grow. I think as an artist, when you stop growing, when you think you know it all, or you think you're, you know, don't tell me what to do, you're fucking dead. You may as well put a gun to your head.
Yeah.
You know, as an artist, you need to constantly grow. You need to constantly, you know, put yourself in a position to learn something. And when we were doing something to talk about and The Replacements, different movies, but like Gina Rowlands, who I think is probably one of the greatest actresses of her generation,
phenomenal.
As well as Duvall, I wouldn't be working. And we were shooting nights, and I drive out to this farm we were shooting at, and I'd go up to the sound guy and I'd say, give me some headphones, and I'd take the script and I'd watch. And people would say, what are you doing here? I'm watching. I'm watching these great actors work. And every take was brilliant. And then when I was doing The Replacements, it was Gene's last night, and I came there, and, you know, Orlando and a bunch of the guys showed up, and they were all going out to have a drink, but they stopped by the football stadium to say goodbye to Gene. And it was Michael or one of the guys said, you know, what are you doing? You going to come with us? And I said, no, I'm going to watch this. And they went, and they all like, all right, man, we'll see you later. And Michael Jace, I think is his name, he says, why aren't you coming? And I said, I'm married and I have a child, and I can't go to, you know, and I work so much, I don't have time to be able to go, you know, and I'm not a part of a theater company, and I don't have the opportunity to study. You know, I worked with Kim Stanley, who had passed away, and she was another great influence besides Cecil Pickett in my life. And I said, you know, I don't have time for that. I've got a life. I've got a family. I've got to work. I've got to support my family and support my craft. And I said, this is one of the greatest actors of our generation, and he's working, and he's my teacher. So I want to watch him. And Michael, the great thing was, all of a sudden, it kind of dawned on him. He went, you know, I saw in his eyes, he went, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But the guys are going, come on, Michael, come on. He's like, all right, I'll see you later. And I could see he was torn. But I stayed, and I held the script in my hand, and I watched Gene do the master, the overs, the close-up, and I watched him change his performance based on the lenses they were using, and I learned an enormous amount on how to work on camera and, you know, with the different, you know, if it's a wide shot, if it's a tight shot, how you bring it in, how you tighten it up, how you subtle it up, you know. And to me, that's learning, you know. That's an acting class for me.
Yeah.
And to me, in my mind, that's the only reason why I do it. I want to work with as good an actor as I possibly can, surround myself with as many great actors as I can, and learn from them. There's a great, I'm going to go way back. You really want to hear a story? I'm going to go way back. Did you ever watch The Incredible Hulk?
Yes, Lou Ferrigno. I have Lou Ferrigno's. Hello, Lou Ferrigno gave me his personal card for he wants to give me weight training. What was it?
Personal
Steve?
Training.
Personal trainer.
PT.
Yes, I'm like, thanks, Lou.
What? You needed it.
You're going to go to Gold's Gym and work out with Lou? Because I see Lou there all the time.
Oh, well, I may come say hi. I don't know about working out.
All right, well, listen.
Crazy.
I was doing an episode. This is really early in my career. I don't even know what year it was. It must have been 1980, 1981. Here, actually, I'm going to go on IMDb, and I'll tell you when it was. But I was working with Bill Bixby, and God bless him. The guy had he had lost his son.
Well,
his son had died of asthma, and he told me the story, and it was heartbreaking. But I don't know why I was telling you the story. Wait a second. I was sitting with Bill, and Bill said to me, let me tell you something, kid. And I was like, what, Bill, what? And he was like, you know, because I had asked him to rehearse with me. I said, can we run lines? And he turned to me, and he goes, I'm not here to run lines. If you want to rehearse, let's rehearse. But that's not what I do. I rehearse, but I don't run lines. If you want to run lines, go talk to the script supervisor. He was really tough, you know, but the one thing he did say to me was, he said, you know, I came to Hollywood for a reason. I came to Hollywood to work as an actor. And he had an acting class. And he told this fantastic story about how he had been in this acting class, and the teacher told everyone to stand up and say their name so that they would remember them and tell them why they wanted to be an actor. And everyone got up and told all these really flowery stories. Well, I did a play, and I'm an artist, and I want to do this, and I want to do that, and do that, and it just like went on and on. And finally, she said, Bill, what do you have to say? And Bill stood up and said, my name's Bill Bixby, B-I-L-L-B-I-X-B-Y. I'm going to be here because I want to make a lot of money, and I want to work as an actor. and they all looked at him, and he goes, Bill Bixby, B-I-X-B-Y, remember it. And the teacher went, I'm going to remember him. You know, and it's the whole idea of like learning, you know, the whole process of like, why did you come here? Everything's a lesson, and nobody seems to remember that. Everyone wants to be, particularly the young actors today, want to be stars, you know. And I always tell them, I go, look, you know, you're on a series, save your money. Because I always tell them the adage, I said, I've been rich 5 times and poor 6.
That's true. That's how it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now I'm not rich. You know, I'm making a living. But there have been times where I've had hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank, you know, and I'm cool with that. I'm like, God damn, you know, honey, you want a car? You know, let's buy a good car that's going to last, you know. I mean, I'm a real middle-class guy, but, you know, when I have money, I like to take my wife on a vacation. I mean, this summer, you know, Warner Brothers paid for us to go to London. I took them to Paris for 5 days, and then, you know, they stayed in London for another week while I was in Nottingham shooting, and then I came back. We spent another 6 days in London, and, you know, but it was on Warner Brothers' dime, so, you know, I was smart about it. I'm not spending my money. I'm going, shit, I want to save, because I know when I get back, there's going to be a month or two where I may not work.
Yep.
You know, and my nut's not cheap, and that's something you better look for when you move out here. You know,
it's funny you brought that up, Brett, because I think, I mean, that's kind of the way I try to look at moving out there. I'm like, look, the reason I want to act and write is because I don't feel like I'm good at anything else. However, that being said, I'm moving out there with the direct purpose to make money, because if I wanted to do this for free, there's plenty of local theaters around here, and I could do it. And I think you have to look at things as a business, but on top of that, Bill Bixby's going to these acting classes, I'm sure, and doing doing all this rehearsal and everything because he wants to be the best. So he makes money. You want to be the best at what you do.
Yeah, you want to grow and become something that somebody wants to work with. I mean, I always tell people, I was telling my daughter the other day, I said, she was mad at me because she got in trouble and she got grounded. She's like, well, I think this is enough grounding. And I said, no, you have another weekend. You're grounded. She's like, why? And I went, I'll tell you why. I said, one time I lost my temper big time on a show. And I went, because I'm Irish, and I blew my stack. And then for a period of a year or two, I was like taking whatever jobs I could get because no one was hiring me. And I said to my manager, I said, what the fuck's going on? He said, well, you blew it, man. You went off the deep end. You screamed at everybody. You lost your temper. And people don't want to work with an asshole. And I said, Harper, I suffered through that, and I got us through it. But I learned my lesson.
Wow.
That there's a time and a place to voice your opinion. There's a time to be a professional. And, you know, if I'm working as a producer, because I just produced my first film, I want to work with people I like. There may be some friction, artistic friction, but professionally they're going to show up on time, they're going to do their job, and they're going to get it done. If they're an asshole, the next time around, I'm going to go, let's get another grip, or let's get another, best boy, because that guy was a dick. I don't want to work with him, or, whoever. That actor was a problem. I don't want to work with him again. And that's the nature of the beast out here, is you have to do your job. You have to deal with the adversity of this business, but you also have to be able to show up and do the best work possible, sometimes under adverse conditions, and still walk away, and people go, that guy's a minch. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I always tell Steve and I talk about this all the time. I always talk about someone with average skills who's a great guy can get the job done, but average skills will get hired more than someone who's extremely talented but a dick.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. Is where are you going to move to when you come out here? Do you know?
I'm looking at Burbank, and then, I've been talking to a lot of people that have been on the show and stuff, and we're going out there this week. I'm going out there to look for housing this week, and we're looking at the Hills, too, but Burbank is where it just kind of seems like it's affordable, and it's around everything.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Studio City's great. It's a little high-end. It's more expensive, but, Sherman Oaks is great. Anywhere in the valley, you can find reasonable rents. But, I'm a surfer, so I had to live in Venice. Well, I mean, when I moved to Venice in 1983, 84, people were going, are you kidding me? Because it was like, the ghetto of the beach area, saying there's gangbangers and there's drug dealers. And I went, well, I can score a little weed. They're not going to shoot a surfer. They didn't shoot each other. But, that was back in 84. And now it's like the place to live. Everyone's like, oh, my God, you live in Venice? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, rent's ridiculous there. I looked.
They're expensive, but you can find some reasonable places. I mean, things have dipped a lot since, the semi-crash we've had. But, California's a cool place to live. But the thing is, and I say this to a lot of people, like I have friends that move out when I first started out, and they go, hey, can you give me a place to live? Can you loan me some money? Can you give me an agent? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? Swim. And they went, what do you mean? I said, if you can swim for a year, come back in a year. If you're still here and you still want to do this, I'll help you out. But there's only so many favors I can call in, and I'm not going to call them in on someone who's just kind of like wants to be here, and if it doesn't work out, they're going to split.
Yep.
So, it's a commitment issue. So, L.A. isn't a town that people come to live because it's the greatest place in the world to live. I mean, there's Santa Barbara, there's San Francisco. There's a lot of great places in California you can live. San Diego, Encinitas, Leucadia, but, L.A. is a town where people – it's a town of visitors, basically.
Yeah.
And
well,
they move here to try and make their mark. And it's and on the other hand, I've lived in Venice. I have a group of friends that, Dennis, has moved to Austin now. But most of my friends aren't in the business, or they're not actors. And, there's lawyers, there's writers, there's, producers, there's photographers, and, they're my buddies. And we can watch football and drink beer, and we never talk about the business. About chicks, we talk about football, we talk about a lot of stuff. But, it's about a life. You create a life here.
I like that.
And it's a great place to live. Traffic sucks sometimes, but it's a great place to live because the weather's so nice.
Yeah, well, I told Steve, I said to Steve, Look, by hook or by crook, I'm 28 now. I'm celebrating 30 out there. Like, I'm not moving back. I would be so embarrassed. Like, this is going to sound really macabre and awful, but I'd rather be dead than move back, honestly. That's awful to say, but...
That is awful to say because, you know, there's a lot better things to do in life than to die. But the bottom line is you'll do fine out here. You know, if you're motivated and you want to do something, you'll make it happen. Everyone gets a shot.
I hope
everyone does. You just have to be ready for it.
Well, you know,
that's what the whole process of keeping your artistic muscles or your writing muscles or whatever it is that, you know, you do, and it'll happen. You just have to be ready when that moment happens.
Well, I was going to say, too, speaking of that in another way, you were talking about how there's highs and maybe not lows in your career, but like sometimes you're higher than others. I think you're headed towards a high here, Brett, because Puncture, you are getting fantastic reviews. It's currently playing in New York, L.A., and Houston. It's about Houston lawyers. It's about from what I know is Chris Evans plays a lawyer who has a drug problem. But he wants to take a case to fight syringe needles. They have safety syringe needles that most insurance companies won't let the hospitals buy because they're too expensive and you have to reuse them and everything. So he goes to court to battle these corporate lawyers, and you're the corporate lawyer. You are the lawyer for this team. And I've been told your performance in this film is excellent, and Chris Evans, I heard, is really good.
Chris is a standout. Chris, his commitment to his performance, and the interesting thing was, you know, Chris and I worked together, and, you know, we were in Houston, my hometown. I got to hang out with my buddies, which was kind of cool to be home, and guys I grew up with to be able to go out and have beers with and stuff. But Chris was really antisocial. You know, I kept thinking, God, this guy's so quiet and just sort of withdrawn. And then the picture opened, was one of the opening films for the Tribeca Film Festival. So I flew to New York, and I'm there, and we had the screening. And then I saw Chris afterwards, and Chris was like, Brad, oh, my God, dude, you're so good in this movie. And he was this totally different guy, and I'm like, what's going on? And I found out later, because I came in, they had started shooting, had been shooting for like 2 weeks before I showed up, that, you know, he was like, you don't talk to me. If you talk to me, you know, it's like, you know, he didn't want to be referred to as Chris. And you know, he was just really, just really wrapped himself around this character so that he didn't want to leave that world that he had to explore, because it's a very dark world that he's
got.
And it was such, the only thing he said to me, I mean, actually, when I rapped, we did that, when you see the movie, the final scene where he and I are together in my kitchen, and, you know, they said, Brett's wrapped, and I shook everyone's hand, and I turned to him, and he looked at me and very quietly said, you know, it's been an honor. And I was like, oh, well, thank you. But that was it. And I thought, well, that was kind of, you know, I thought there'd be a whole lot, you know, like, let's go get a shot at tequila together or something.
Yeah.
And then in New York, oh, my God, we tore it up. I mean, I got home at 4 in the morning, and I was staying with a friend of mine, Bo Welf, who was the production designer on Men in Black 3. They were shooting there, and I was staying with him. And he wakes me up at 7 o'clock and goes, you want your coffee? And I go to hell, man. I just got in. Don't wake me up. Because he was going to work.
That's
great.
I'd like to do that. I could do 4 a.m. once or twice a year. That's about it.
Well, you know, at my age, I'm double nickels now. I'm 55. I just turned 55, and I was just like, back when I was 30 or 22, I could do that shit. But now it's like, you know, I come home from that, my wife went, what happened to you? And I said, you have no idea.
Yeah, I'm 28 and I look 55. You're 55 and all these women still want you and everything. That's kind of fucked up for me. I don't know.
Well, you got to surf. See, surfing keeps me young. I mean, you know, my mom is 88 and I'm her legal guardian, and she lives out here from Texas. And she says, you know, I still feel like I'm 18. You know, you do. You still think, you know, the way you thought back then, but your body doesn't. You know, if it goes away, it goes away. And fortunately for me, I keep, you know, like right before I called you, I went for an hour walk and worked up a good sweat and came home and made myself a vodka soda and then called you guys. And, you know,
oh,
I'm like,
pops, my dad,
I'm
back.
You know,
been...
I'm good. I exercise, I surf, I golf every day. You know, it's like do stuff.
Yeah, that's my dad's movie. Comes home and has the vodka soda, and I took an hour smoke. So we're kind of at the opposite ends of the trail there, but I had some Marlboro Lights.
Together. I'll bring a cigar. You can smoke your cigarettes. And
yeah, I was going to say, I got my Marlboro Lights. If I smoke a cigar, I want to inhale because I need it.
Well, I inhale a little bit. Sorry.
Oh, it's always...
So listen, the thing is, I just want to say, puncture, and you know, I said this earlier, I don't handle compliments very well. I don't tout myself. You know, I'm not one of those guys who blows my own horn very often. And I'm not blowing my horn on this. I'm really proud of the work I did in this movie. But I just hope people go out and see it because it, one, is an incredible film. And the only reason I know this is because I took my wife to a screening for Buyers here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It was before Millennium picked it up. And we saw it, and the movie ended. And I just turned to my wife, who I respect, you know, beyond compare. And I said, honey, what did you think? And she looked over at me and she said, you are so lucky to be in this movie and you were so good in this film. And then I realized, okay, this is a really good film.
You know, it's not often that reviews talk about people that weren't the leads in the film. And I've seen your name get brought up numerous times as being excellent Hollywood Reporter, Variety. So, I mean, that's great. I can't wait to see it. I wish it was out my direction. I may have to wait.
Well, I think it's, well, you see, you're coming here next week. I think it opens.
I'm here this week. This week I'll be in L.A.
You'll be there this week. Because I think it opens either next weekend or the weekend after in Chicago.
Oh, very good. I will see it then before I move out. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, check it out. Because the movie, not only is it a great film, but it also has a great social message. You know,
yeah.
I mean, 800,000 care workers a year are punctured by needles. And the reason that AIDS has spread so fast in Russia and in Africa is because of the needles they use.
Well, yeah.
They're plastic needles, and sterilize those needles. So they just reuse them constantly, and it's just passing, you know, AIDS and Hep C and everything else to these children.
And what's great about this movie, it makes mention of that, and the mass media doesn't really make mention of the syringes being part of the problem in Africa. They make it out to be it's about sex. And I think it's a very good message to be – I think it's an important topic to be discussed. That's why I really want to see the movie. Plus, I love law movies. Steve knows I watch Law and Order all the fucking time. I mean, the
Yeah, I do.
You and my wife. I actually like that show, too. I was actually – here's the funny thing is I was cast in Law and Order L.A. as
the
DA. And they fitted me for like 12 suits, and they said, oh, my God, this is going to be big. You may end up being a regular on the show. And I did one episode, and after one episode, they said they may use you in the next one. And I said, well, I need to know. And they said, no, you're not. And I said, okay, I'm going to Montana to fish for a week, and then I'll come back. And I came back, and on a Monday morning, my manager called me. He goes, they just replaced you. The network wants someone older, and they hired Peter Coyote.
Yeah, I saw that. I was going to say, so that role was originally yours, Peter Coyote's role.
Did you get to keep
it?
Oh.
But I think they got nervous. They wanted it to be a little bit more like the formula of the original series where someone was a bit much of an elder statesman playing that part.
Well, Dick Wolf's great, but he's known for recasting all the time. Him and Davey Kelly, they're known for tooling a lot. But if I'm your agent right now, if I'm Brett Cullen's agent, I'm looking at this list of things you got coming out. First of all, Dark Knight Rises. Well, everyone and their fucking mother's going to see you in that. Red Dawn, which I've heard great things about with Chris Hemsworth. It's a remake of the original. And Brett, you're in that, and I'm sure that's going to do really well. And then, person of interest, are you going to be recurring on that show? Because I've been watching the show since it premiered, and I'm watching your character this week. I'm waiting for something pivotal or some. I mean, I know you kind of tell the backstory of Michael Emerson's character with the Flash, and you guys are friends. Now, do you think this could be a recurring gig for you on there?
Well, it's supposed to be. We'll see what happens because you never know what the networks decide to do. But yeah, it's supposed to be. But I want to mention something else, which not many people are aware of, and which I'm extraordinarily proud of. Is while I was doing Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
I was also shooting a movie called My Mother's...
I want to bring that up, My Mother's Curse, which I believe... is that a Seth Rogen film?
Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand.
And Barbara Streisand. It's a road comedy, I hear.
Yeah.
It's
comedy or dramedy. You know, it's both, because it's really a heartfelt film, and I play Barbara Streisand's, you know, love interest.
Oh, wow. So
yeah.
Did you get to meet Jimmy Brolin?
I did, because I know Josh, because Josh and I did The Young Riders together.
Oh, I
and Jimmy came to the set, and he was fantastic. And Barbara looked at me when Jim came in, because Jim and I are about the same size. She goes, "See, I told you I like tall guys."
You think Barbara had a hand in casting you in that role, by the way?
Well, I had to meet her.
It was
the day I was leaving to go to London the first time.
Joan London.
And they said, my manager and agent called me and said, "You've got to go down to Westlake." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, they're shooting, you know, My Mother's Curse." I said, "Well, I thought that went away." And they said, "No, you're still in the mix. They want to meet you. And the director wants to sit with you for a minute in between takes." So I said, "Okay." And I drove down. I said, "But I leave at like 7 tonight." And they said, "You've got to get in the car and go now." So I jumped in my car and I drove down to the casting. Agent met me in front of the building. We went in and they were shooting the scene, and I met the producers. I met Seth's partner, and then I met Seth, and I talked to the director, and then she goes, "Well, look, come on, I want to introduce you to Babs." And I just about swallowed my tongue. I thought, "Oh, my God, I'm going to meet Barbara Streisand," because, you know, I mean, Barbara Streisand's an icon.
Yeah.
So I walked over, and she said, "So, hi, you're Brent Cullen?" And I said, "No, ma'am, it's actually Brett." And I almost choked because I called her ma'am, and she looked at me, she goes, "Oh, you are from Texas." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." I said it again. I thought, "Oh, fuck, what am I doing?" So, you know, she walked away, and then I watched him shoot for a while, and then I finally looked at him, and I said, "Look, you know, I kind of have to go. I've got to finish packing and get ready to go to London." And they said, "Okay, great." And the first AD is a really good friend of mine. His name's Joe Camp III, and his father was the man who did the Benji movies.
Oh, okay.
I had done Red Dawn with him. I had done Monte Carlo with him. And then this, and when I walked on the set, he went, "Brett Cullen." He came over and gave me a big hug, and the producer looked at me. What's his name? His brother's an actor I worked with on From the Earth to the Moon. Anyway, he looked at me and he went, "Oh my God." I go, "What?" He goes, "That's the first time I've seen Joe Camp smile since we started shooting."
Wow.
So I was like, "Oh, well, cool." And, as I was driving away, I was in my car going down the 101 to get back to the 405 to get back to the West Side. I get a text from Joe saying, "I don't know what you did, but I think they're going to hire you." And then, you know, they did. And I got to work with, you know, I was Barbara's love interest. I got to flirt with her and, you know, pick her up and do this whole thing. So it was really cool.
I know what you did. You got another woman to crush on you.
Well, I guess.
Add Babs to the list. Tell the wife. Babs is on. Is she? Come on. It's Barbara Streisand. You know she picked you. You know she was like, "That's the guy."
Well, I tell you what. Before I left, I turned to the producer and I said, "Please," and to the director, I said, "Would you please apologize to Ms. Streisand? Because I didn't mean to call her ma'am. Because I'm 20 years younger than her, or 18 years or something." And I said, you know, because they had to take the blonde out of my hair and make it a little grayer. They tried to make me a little older looking. And even though I was wearing a cowboy hat most of the time. But I said, "Please." And they said, "Oh, no, she thought that was charming."
That's pretty good. You know what? I have a funny Jimmy Brolin story. So James Brolin was on Facebook for a while. And Ron Zimmerman, I guess, is a friend of his, whatever. And we were all talking in some status or whatever. And I'm like, "Oh, cool, I'll add James Brolin. I love James Brolin." So I add him, and he would talk about how him and Barbara, his status updates were all about him and Babs watching American Idol and how he's forced to watch it. And it was really funny. And he has all these personal pictures up, and they go on these trips and whatever. All of a sudden, like a week later, account shut down.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
No, so I've always speculated Babs put the kibosh on the book.
Well, she is extremely private and amazingly shy.
Yeah. So she may have been like, "No, none of this."
Right. Yeah. You know, she's, everyone's like, "Oh, my God, you're working with Barbara Streisand. She's such an icon." And you've heard these rumors about, you know, that she's difficult. Well, I couldn't have had a more fun, more enjoyable experience working with someone. This woman was so fantastic to me. And when I came back from London, I had 1 day of shooting, or 2 days of shooting left. And I was on stage, and she was walking by me, and I'm a lot taller than her. And I said, "Hi, Barbara." And she walked. She glanced at me because it was dark on a stage. And then she walked like 2 feet. And she goes, "Oh, my God, Brett. Oh, I'm so glad you're back. I'm so glad that you could get back from London to shoot this." And, you know, because it was a scheduling thing. And I said, "Barbara, it's fine. I'm here, man. It's all good." She went, "I'm so happy."
Down.
I love how you're telling Barbara, "It's cool, Bob. It's cool, Babs.
Cool, Babs.
Here.
Cool.
Here. Don't worry about it. The stars arrived.
Jeez, let me tell you, this woman is something else. I would, you know, I'd walk through broken glass for 3 miles to work with her again.
That's awesome. Brett, I got to ask you about, you're producing now.
Yes.
And Beneath the Darkness. Now, first of all, is it true? I hear a rumor who your producing partner is. And it's too awesome not to be true, I hope. Meatloaf?
No.
Oh, didn't
Meatloaf
you do something with
Meatloaf? A very dear friend of mine. We had a company together.
Uh-huh.
And Meat's a great guy. I mean, he's one of the greatest guys and nothing like what you think he was. People always go, oh, my Meatloaf, the motorcycle crazed rocker. And he's one of, like, the first time we ever really hung out together, we were in Mexico at a golf tournament. And the night before, I drank a lot of margaritas. And he doesn't drink at the time. He didn't drink at all. I think he drinks a little bit when he's on tour. And the phone rings at 8 in the morning. And I pick up the phone. I go, hello, who is this? You know, waking me up. And I said, hi. I said, who is this? And he goes, it's Marvin. I said, Marvin, I don't know any Marvin. He goes, oh, sorry, it's Meat. I haven't had my coffee yet.
That's pretty good.
One of the most laid-back guys in the world. No, my producing partner is a guy named Scott Mednick.
Oh, okay.
Was one of the founding members of Legendary Pictures that produced all the Batman movies.
Who
produced it, one of his big coups was 300.
Yeah.
He did We Are Marshall. Great guy, smart guy, genius, wonderful guy to hang out with and as a partner. And, you know, has been very supportive of me. And he's the one that brought me Beneath the Darkness and said, look, I got this project through these guys that I had introduced him to and said, you know, they want to make it for $2 million with no names, but I think we can jack the budget up a little bit if Dennis will do it. Do you think Dennis would be interested? So I took it to Dennis and said, you know, are you interested in doing this movie? We'd shoot it in the Austin area, and he was going to be in Austin. It was over Thanksgiving. And he said, well, let me read it. So he read it, and then he said, yeah, okay, well, you know, but it's got to be for the right number. So we found the right number. We made the deal. It took about, you know, 3 weeks to make that happen. And it fell apart a couple of times, and we finally made the deal. And then they asked me also to act in it. And we got Amy Teagarden from Friday Night Lights, who is just one of the most beautiful, talented girls in the world. And Tony Aller, and, you know, just, you know, really fantastic young actors, because it's a teen thriller. And Dennis plays a character that you've never seen him play before. He plays a mortician who buries people alive. It's a retelling of The Telltale Heart. It's basically a modern day version of that.
Dennis is the bad guy in this?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm intrigued now. Now I want to see this.
Yeah, it's a fun film. It's gonna. I think it's coming out, I want to say, in November.
Is it going to get a wide release?
It's going to get, it's not getting a huge release. It's getting like 60 cities or something like that. And then it's also getting, at the same time, a pay-per-view thing.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing Mark Cuban does with a lot of his films.
Yes, yeah, the video on demand, the same day.
Right.
And yeah, that's awesome. I like that idea, actually.
So that's going to happen. It's actually opening the Austin Film Festival, which I'm supposed to go to on October 22nd.
Yes, that's month, yeah.
So I'm trying to work that out and trying to get down there for that. And,
I think you should go. I think you may have a decent time, Brett.
Yeah, I've always had a good time in Austin.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of people there too. You're going to be hanging out with a lot of cool people because everyone goes to that now, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, I was telling a story today about how Rick Perry, who's running for president now, used to play golf with Dennis and I because Dennis used to do a charity tournament, and he was really funny because my wife and daughter were there, and I said, "Hey, Rick," because he always played the final round with Dennis and I, and because I helped organize the tournament and put it together with the promoter with Dennis. And the last day was a tournament about all the celebrities. It was a real tournament. And Rick was sitting there. I said, would you take a picture of my wife and daughter? He goes, sure, Brett, that'd be great. And took the picture, and then he looked at me, and he goes, you're a Democrat, aren't you? I said, yeah, I am. And he goes, all right, we'll just agree to disagree.
But so have you remained friends with Rick?
I was invited. I was invited to the first tax credit that they signed into legislation. Dennis and I were in Austin. We were there for the signing of that and the announcement. It's since changed. At that time, it was 5%, which I turned to Rick and I said, this isn't going to do anything. And he goes, I know, but it's a beginning. And now it's up to like 20% or something. So, you know, we got some of those tax credits when we shot down there, and I want to go shoot another film Dennis wants to do that he's attached to, about a tent evangelist that we hope to shoot in Texas. And there's other films. I think that it's a great place to shoot. They really open their arms to you when you come down to Texas. And, I'm really fond of the state. I don't particularly agree with a lot of the politics down there now. They think I'm this left-wing liberal, you know, socialist. My friends in Texas do, whereas people here in California think I'm a conservative Democrat.
Well, what's funny is I was talking the other day, I forget what we were talking about, but I was saying the country has this, like, because you grow up and all you're watching on TV is bad shit happening in Hollywood, divorces, gossip, this guy, that guy, so I think everyone has this twisted view on people in L.A. Like my dad always says, I go, "Oh, you going to come out and visit, Dad?" And he goes, "Land of the fruit and nuts." And I'm I'm like, "Dad,
when the axis tilted, all the nuts rolled to California."
Is that not true, though, Brett? Like, do people in other parts of the country, especially since you came from Texas and we're in the Midwest, Do you feel like people had L.A. all wrong or some wrong? What were some of your perceptions going out there that you would tell people, look, that's all bullshit?
It is all bullshit. You know, basically, California is like any other city. I mean, I felt comfortable here because I grew up in Houston, which is a big city. You had to drive everywhere, wherever you went.
Right.
Same thing in L.A. You can live in certain areas, like in Venice, and I can ride my bike around and never have to really get in my car if I wanted to. There's restaurants that are available. There's, grocery stores and stuff. But things are, you have the medical marijuana shops here. You know, there's things about California that are a little bit more liberal than other parts of the state or other parts of the country. But I think that California is like anywhere else. I mean, right now, everybody's struggling.
Yeah,
economy and the states themselves are in such great debt. It's just trying to figure out how to make it work. And, people here, Orange County is like this bastion of, right-wing Republicans.
Yeah.
They're powerful. And Sacramento, I think, has its share of Republicans. And, so there's parts of the state, San Francisco and L.A. and San Diego are pretty liberal. But if you go out, to Palm Springs, you're going to run into the Republican, Central or Palm Desert, where all the blue hairs are sort of retired and the snowbirds. But, I think the California in itself is probably one of the most exciting places to live in the world. I mean, I can be in Venice Beach in an hour and a half in the winter, or in an hour from here, I can be skiing. A minute from here, I can be in the surf. I can go out to the desert and play golf, where it's just absolutely gorgeous and, I mean, what's bad about that?
Yeah, I agree. I go out there all the time, so I just kind of get this feeling. I come back home, and people try to talk you out of moving there. They're like, "There's no jobs."
Well, I'll say this. I mean, Chicago, in my mind, is the greatest small town city in the world.
Well, there you go.
People in Chicago, you walk in a grocery store, people, "How you doing?"
Yeah.
We've got some grapes in today. They're fantastic. You go, "Oh my God, people are talking." In New York, people are like, "What do you want?"
Yeah, I was going to say, are people going to be annoyed of me in L.A. because I say hello and talk to everybody? I'm like,
The difference with L.A. is if you're in the industry, when you first start, people go, "Oh, I love that. It was fantastic." Well, you know what? Put that in writing, because what they say isn't necessarily what they mean.
Yeah.
It's a business here, and, there's a lot of flaky people, and there's a lot of really great people, but the industry itself is, one where, you've got to, as my producing partner says, show me the money, put it in a bank, and then we'll believe you're real. Otherwise, you're doing the dance, and no one's really coming to the table.
Now, how do you do that, though, if you want to act and write? What is the equivalent to show me the money, put it in the bank, and show me that you're real?
Well, the Seth Rogen of it all. Write some really great scripts that people have to have, and they're going to show you the money. And then, or do one, do a couple of movies like really low budget that makes some money, and all of a sudden, you know, the studios are knocking on your door saying, okay, we want to give you an overall deal. We'll pay your overhead. We'll give you $100,000 a year just for your secretary, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, they'll be all over you, you know, but you've got to deliver something, you know, whether it's a script and say, well, I'm, you know, well, I want to buy the script. We want Seth Rogen to star in this. And you go, no. I'm going to act in this. And then you've got, you know, it's the old Rocky story, you know,
yeah.
Stallone
yeah.
wrote that script and, you know, said, darling, we're going to eat grass if we have to, because I'm going to play the part. And he stuck to his guns and eventually did. And, you know, look at his life.
He did all right. Yeah, I suppose he's okay. He's not cutting.
I don't know if I want his life.
Oh, well, he's not cutting.
I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, oh, they're so rich and famous. And I said, being rich doesn't buy you happiness. You know, most people get rich and expect something like their life's going to change. Just because you have money doesn't mean all of a sudden people are going to be, you know, there are going to be a lot of yes men around you, but real friends aren't necessarily going to be right there by your side.
Well, like you said, your closest friend's Dennis Quaid. He's one of the biggest actors in Hollywood, and I'm sure he's not always happy. I'm sure, you know, money's not the cure for everything.
No, money's not. And, you know, the thing that makes us friends is that, now, there's two things. One is I can tell Dennis the truth, and he hears me. Like when we were doing Beneath the Darkness, we would do a take, and the director said, I like that. That's great. And then he'd look at me and go, what do you think? And I said, well, I think you can do it better. He'd go, all right, I want another take. And he said, what do you want me to do? And I'd say, tighten it up. It'd be a little scarier or be funnier or something. And he'd go, okay. And he'd go, do it. You know, he trusts me. On the other hand, what I said to Dennis, I said, we were playing golf one day at Bel Air, and I said, you know the difference between you and I? And he goes, what? And I said, we can leave the country club. You go down Sunset to your house. I get on the 405 and go down to Venice. Someone sees me picking my nose in the car. They go, oh, God, that's gross. They see you picking your nose in the car, and it's on TMZ, pal.
Dennis Quaid's picking his nose. That's what
I... Right.
And then who's going to believe nerds like us? Who's going to care about nerds like us going, Brett Cullen's picking his nose?
Right.
Harvey Leonard,
not, because
like,
I've managed to have a career and been under the radar for so long that, you know, I mean, people appreciate my work, but they don't look at me as, you know, as fodder for these awful magazines out there.
You are great, though. Would you mind taking a couple questions, Brett?
No, I don't mind.
Okay, Alex, do you have anything for Brett other than his handicap? You can ask that, too, if you'd like.
Brett,
this is the golf pro, Alex Luisi.
Hi, how's it going, Brett? Yeah, I hear you golf a lot, and I hear Savannah, Georgia, and I went to school, actually, down in Hilton Head. I went to that golf academy, so I'm a big golfer.
Oh, you went to Hank Haney's?
I went before that. My brother was actually on the reality show on the Golf Channel with him.
Okay, because my partner, Scott Mednick's son, went to that high school. He's now starting at, I think, UC San Diego or San Diego something.
The Heritage Academy and Hilton Head and Sea Pines over. That's the high school. But I want to know just what your handicap is.
My index is a 5.6.
Oh, okay. All right.
So are you better than Brett?
I got to give him around 1.5 or 2 strokes.
I'll take him. Because I've been playing a lot. That's the tough thing about that index is... You know, I'll play one round like a month ago, and I shot, you know, an 81 at a tough course, and I think, well, that my handicap will go up, and it drops, and I'm like, that's not fair.
It's the short game and the putting, I'm telling you.
I know, it is. It's all, you know, I play with guys because I got a bad neck, and I've got to have a surgery on my neck, but I don't hit the ball as far as I used to, and, like, I'll hit it 250, and my friends are hitting it, you know, 280, 300, you know, and they hit it on the green, and I'm close to the green, maybe I'm off a little bit, but my chipping and my putting, it drives them nuts, because I chip up, and I'm like, you know, I got a tap in, and they're like, Jesus Christ! I'm like, hey, man, you know, it's the short game. That's where you win the money.
All right.
So, any more golf questions for Brett? You're good on golf? Do you want to ask him what course you should go be a pro at?
Yeah, I might be looking at applying to a couple of country clubs out there when I... Maybe we go out in L.A. a couple of days.
I may have to offer your services up on this show to people that want to get some lessons or just golf.
Brett, I'm that guy that everyone invites to the golf outings just to hit the ball long, and then they say...
Yeah, they don't really like you.
Yeah,
they just invite you for your good game.
Exactly.
And then they're like, get the fuck out of here.
Please leave.
Well, you should go play... You know where you should go look at Sherwood Country Club.
Okay.
Which is a hell of a track. It's one of my favorite courses. In Bel Air, obviously. But there's some really good courses out here. I mean, if you come out here, go play La Purisima north of Santa Barbara. It's where they have the Q School the regional qualifying and also the U.S. Open qualifying sometimes. Right. It's It's a local course. It's a muni. You know, it's like $50 to play, but it's one of the best tracks in Central California.
Nice. There you go, Tin Cup.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Steve, you got
all right.
Questions?
Hello, Brett. I do have one question that I'm sure no one's ever asked you before.
How sure are you?
Oh, I'm so sure that I'd bet the money I don't have on it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which isn't a whole lot, but okay. So have you taken a whole lot of your gas station experience with you into the world of acting? Because I worked at a 7-Eleven, and I'm taking a lot of that with my writing work.
Well, you know what's great about working with the public?
Yes.
Is that you get to see the real deal. You get to see characters that you don't, like there was a woman that used to come in five times a day and ask me to check her tires, like her pressure on her tires. And this was an old woman. And she'd get out and she'd walk around the car and she'd watch me do it and go, "You're not doing it right." You know? And so you start to go, "Oh my God, this can't be real. I can't be dealing with this." But these people, you know, in my mind, Ernie, who owned the gas station, was a character that I'll never forget. If I ever get the opportunity to play this guy, to me, that, you know, so what I did in the gas station, no. But what I saw in the gas station, I cataloged, and that's important. And you work in a 7-Eleven, I mean, trust me, the people that come in there, tell me, are there not some characters that you can look at and go, "Oh, no, that's somebody I got to write a character around."
Oh, I worked. Not only did I work, I'm no longer employed there. I do other things, but I worked.
What, you got fired?
No, I quit. I respectfully quit at the 7-Eleven. I worked third shift Friday and Saturday nights, so it doesn't.
Ooh, that's a fun time.
Oh yeah, real real fun. I've been held up twice while working there, and it's been definitely took some stories from it. But you said a lot of things tonight that made me think. This is a guy who definitely has worked with the public, because your whole outlook on
persona,
your whole outlook on certain things where you got to get the bills paid and that kind of thing really kind of sounded like myself. So I like that.
Well, you have to understand. I mean, I come from, if you kind of look at the history of my family, my father's family was the Cullen family of Houston. They're a big giant oil family. And we were a real middle class family. We didn't have their money. And, you know, my father struggled a lot of his life because he was a wildcatter trying to pay our bills. And I was always like, you know what, he left my mom in debt when he passed away. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to do that. I mean, I have a life insurance policy that if I die, my family's taken care of. And I just went, you know, I've got to supply them with the means to be able to survive in the world that we live in. And you know, so I'm a real middle-class guy, which is probably why I like Chicago, why I like, you know, people, and I'm one of those guys that people always go, "You just get along with everyone." I mean, I don't like everyone, but I can talk to just about anybody. But, you know, that's the bottom line. I mean, you sort of have to look at the world you live in and catalog what it is, particularly if you're an artist, and see what it is and how you can use what's in front of you to somehow put that into your work.
Well, I tell you what, Brett, I usually take more questions from Twitter, and there was a bunch on Twitter, but we're down to 2 minutes, so I'd love to have you on again sometime. We can talk more.
I'd love to do it, but I want to say this.
Yes.
I didn't know how to do this when Chris McDonald was on there, and like I said, I wrote in. I said, "Where's my bourbon?" because I turned him on to this stuff called Bullet Bourbon or Bulliette Bourbon that's fantastic. And so I was like going, I was waiting for someone to say, "Chris, Brett Cullen wants to know where his bourbon is."
Well, usually it's Larry Poindexter that's annoying all our guests with his questions. Usually it's LP. Do you know Larry?
Yes, I do.
He's a good man, isn't he?
He's a good guy. He's funny. Larry and I have known each other for a lot of years.
He's a funny fuck. I'm hoping to see him this weekend when I'm out there. Brett, I'm very thankful that you did this, and I'd love to see you out there when we're out there.
Well, how long are you going to be here for?
Well, I'm going to be here. I'm going out the 6th through the 10th. I got some meetings set up, and I'm looking for housing. And then we move out October 28th. We start the drive.
Well, when you come out of the 28th, because I'm gone, I have to go. I'm hosting this thing for Houston Works USA in Houston. It puts, you know, minorities to work and pays for their college. Dan Rather did it last year, and they asked me this year, and I was flattered. So I'm going there on the 5th, and I'll be gone through the 9th, and I got a big, huge dog and a guy with a gun protecting my house while I'm gone, if anyone's listening. But I'm going to be gone, so when you're here, I'll be gone. I'll come back on the evening of the 9th. But listen, when you're back, or you've got my information, so email me or Facebook me, and we'll hook up and have a beer, and we can bullshit some more, and I'd love to be back on your show.
I'd love to bullshit. I'll see you then, Brett. You're the best.
Thank you.
All right, take care, man. Thanks for having me.
It's right now, and you're filming an episode of Body Approved, and everyone heard everything else you got coming out. You're rolling right now, buddy. You're the best.
Yeah, man. Keep
Thank
it coming.
You.
I'm
Thank
happy.
You.
Thanks for having me, man.
Tell Chris McDonald we said hi. We love him.
I certainly will. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks, Brett.
All right. Adios.
Well, we're down to like 45 seconds, so I'm not even going to play a song or anything.
Yeah, great show.
Steve, anything else? Alex, anything else? Brett Cullen, an hour and a half.
Nothing that's already been said. Love him.
Good man.
Yeah. Nice guy, man.
Yep.
Stand up. Good golfer, too.
Cool. Mikey Terzo, for sitting on the line the whole time listening, you, sir, are the greatest ever. I love you, Mikey. I'll talk to you
love
soon.
Love you, Mikey.
All right. I will see you guys next week when we're back from L.A. Until then, the tribute shows will be up Thursday, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday. You could check www.thematthewarren.com, and you can check those out Tuesday, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday. Producer Caesar will be putting them up. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.